Water, earth, fire, air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a month had passed, and my cousin and I discovered that Avatar, a show about an airbender named Aang, would start streaming on Netflix in a few weeks. And although our podcasting skills are great, we had a lot of episodes to watch before we were ready to podcast for anyone. But we believe Aang saved us from the chaos of our world. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Hi everyone, today we're continuing our journey through Avatar, The Last Airbender. I'm Andrea, and Paul and I are cousins who love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi, and we talk about it pretty much endlessly.
Yep, and in this episode, we continue through book two. Team Avatar is armed with new information about a solar eclipse, but the consequences of learning this information have cost them a lot. Appa has been captured, and now they are stranded.
If you've been listening to our previous Atla episodes, you will know that each episode we discuss several chapters of the series and provide our reflections on the themes and share what we've learned. This week, we're discussing episode 11 through 13 on Netflix. So if you haven't watched through episode 13 yet, go watch, come back when you finish. I do want to note that Netflix actually renumbered these episodes and combined some. So in the original run of the show, the episodes were actually 11 through 14. So we'll be using the original titles of those episodes from the first run today.
I don't know what you're talking about. My name is Judy. Kin Folklore does not have adult content. You're listening to Kin Folklore now, and I'm sure you will not hear any jokes about psychedelic drug trips or moonlit kisses from a Kyoshi warrior. You can enjoy your time here without concern of such filth.
Yeah, right.
Judy, what up? We're going to be cussing and talking about a lot of dirty shit, okay?
That's how we do.
That's how we do. Adult content on the way. Here we go. So, we'll start with episode 11. With the revelation that Appa is gone, Aang, rightfully so, is devastated and takes...
So am I.
Yeah, me too. We're not happy about this Appa situation. But you know what? Aang takes his frustrations out on the crew. He's like mad at Toph first, and then he gets mad at the rest of the team. At that point, he pretty much just like, you know what? I'm going to look for Appa. None of you care about anything but yourselves. You guys are whack sauce. I'm out. And he leaves them there to fend for themselves as he searches for Appa. Katara was, like, supporting and backing up Toph? Are we in the upside down? What's going on? Like, this is, like, really bad when...
Aang was out of line.
Yeah.
He really... I mean, understandably so, but he lost it. Toph is like, I literally just held this building up so you can survive.
So you can... And he's like... And Aang's comeback to that is, you could have came and got us. Really, dude? The building was sinking. You're wilding out. No. So, but you know what we're experiencing... We're finally getting a real close look at the darker side of Puff, my friends. Here it is. An aggrieved Puff is worse than anything you've seen in this world. As a
it's
Puff,
true.
I can tell you. Anyway.
It's really true. Hufflepuffs are the worst when they're mad. Like, it's really true.
Oh, man. So, meanwhile, Zuko and Iroh are also continuing on their journey when they're intercepted by the Rough Rhinos, who Iroh apparently knows. And he knows them well by name. Like, he's picking out their tea preferences and shit. Like, it's wild.
Also, I'm just like, wait, you guys have been doing this for years? Like, I don't...
and you know what's wild? The best part about it is that despite... him noting that they're very skilled warriors as they are with weapons. Each have a specialty weapon. He also lets Zuko know that they're pretty dope as a singing group.
I forgot about that. He really does mention their musical abilities. I totally forgot about that.
So does this run-up have less to do than Andrea with them trying to capture them for Fire Lord Zuko? Or is this more about the fact that they're a little salty that Iroh is kicking them off the charts with all these number ones he's running up?
I mean, you know, probably his reputation has gotten around ever since Girls of Ba Sing Se.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, man. So while they're in, you know, Zuko and Iroh hold their own. Iroh shows, like, his cunning, his moves. And to be completely honest, Zuko is on it. Like, he's, like, doing his thing. So they fend off the rough rhinos. And while running away, Iroh finds some inspiration from something that Zuko says. He says something about old friends that don't want to attack them. Stick that as a feather in your cap and think about that, because it really does spark something for Iroh. Meanwhile, Katara and Sokka and Toph and Momo are in the desert and they are not doing well.
All no, right? They're strung out. They're tired. They're depressed. Aang is gone. Like, it's a mess.
And fucking Sokka. Toph bumps into him and he's like, hey, can you watch where you're going? She's like, no, I really can't. I'm fucking blind.
Not only that, she can't see, but also, like, she can't see with her feet like she normally does. She said that so many times. Like, I don't know how many times she has to tell y'all she cannot feel the earth.
These guys are driving me nuts with all these dunks on top for her ability to see. It's really wild. And they do it, like, almost like without thinking about it, right?
So they're super insensitive.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so crazy. So Aang is also struggling, not doing so great. And, you know, Katara is trying to rally everyone's spirits in the desert, right? So, you know, Aang gets really frustrated while he's apart from them, you know, smashes the sand. We see a mushroom cloud. But the reason why that is funny is that this guy, Sokka, as they run out of water, decides that he's going to drink some cactus juice. Well, cactus juice must have mushrooms in it because he's tripping balls, okay?
No.
He's like...
Sokka is not okay. Like, he is really struggling. And Momo, they're both really struggling. It is not great.
It is... It's actually excellent from a viewer standpoint. You're just loving it. He's sucking. He's having a tough time. So it's not great for him, but it's so great to see him be like, why are we in the middle of the ocean? Maybe the mushroom is our friend. Let's go to him. Like, oh my God, it's great. It's
well,
like,
I mean, I relate to Katara a lot, and especially in this episode.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it from her point of view. Like, it's already rough out here in these streets, and Sokka is losing it.
Yeah. And Toph is like, can I have some of that cactus juice?
No. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
It's too much.
Team Avatar is unraveling. Let's just put it that way. So Toph is having a hard time, right? She can't sense anything. Sokka's lost his mind. Aang is sad about Appa. And you know what? Katara is really trying to hold everyone together, and she decides that using the scrolls that Sokka stole from the library, which he, you know, is like, I didn't steal anything. What are you talking about? She's like,
I was there.
I don't know. Anyway, so Katara decides that they should use them, and she realizes that what they'll be able to do is navigate using the stars by night and rest by day. So this is their plan. Back at the Oasis, Jinfu and Master Yu are looking for information on Toph, and Master Yu seems concerned about the terms, like, and rightfully so. Jinfu is out here trying to murk our girl Toph.
Yeah, he's like, they're, you know, dead or alive. No, that's not what Toph's family said. Like,
oh my God.
Do not bring the corpse of their daughter back. Like, that wasn't what they told you to do.
He's still salty that these kids took that money off him? Is that what's happening? Like,
I don't know. I think he's just like a meathead. Like, he's just like not able to connect the dots here.
At all. But you know what? They get a bit distracted when they see wanted posters for Iroh and Zuko. And they see it just as Iroh and Zuko pull up. Okay? So they're there. And then all of a sudden, In the tavern at the Oasis, Iroh is sitting and he sees another elderly man. And at that table, he's playing Pai Sho. He wants to, you know, offers his white lotus tile and they begin a game. They play for a bit and then the man welcomes Iroh as a brother, saying the white lotus opens wide to those who know our secrets. Zuko is totally confused at this point.
And so rude.
Super rude. What are you old gas bags talking about, is what he says. Well, these old gas bags are talking about something quite profound, as we will find out as we go later in the story. Stay tuned. Jinfu and Master Yu approach. They're also impatient, and apparently these motherfuckers don't like Pai Sho. Pai Sho seems like a fine game. Everyone's ready to break up the game. But they approach the man that's playing with Iroh, and he basically turns the entire tavern on them just by mentioning that there's a reward and mentioning the gold. At that point, while they fight off all the other patrons, Zuko and Iroh slip out and escape. Team Avatar finds a sand glider and they use it to make it over to a cave. The cave is actually a giant hive for enormous wasps. I got all kinds of anxiety around this. I don't love it. I really don't love Wasp. But you know what? We move on. One catches up to Momo. Momo is not happy that he's going away, but Momo is a free spirit. He's still tripping off of that psychedelic juice that he drinks. So he's like, oh, where am I going? But Aang is refusing to lose anyone else. Gets out there, wipes out a Wasp, and just as the Wasp are advancing, a group of masked men Earthbend to protect the Wasp, right? Protect who?
I don't know who they were trying to protect.
Yeah, I don't know. They seem it's pretty murky. But they get there, they show up, and these men are part of the Hami tribe. And they accuse them, Team Avatar, of stealing a sand sailor. Toph recognizes the voice of the leader's son as one of the people who actually stole Appa. And Aang loses it. He's like, where's my bison? Okay? It's not going down like this for Aang. We'll come back to that scene. Because meanwhile, with Team Zuko, the elderly man welcomes Iroh, who now, it is revealed, is a Grand Master of the Order of the White Lotus. This is when we see now the importance of why Iroh wanted to stop during season one to find his white lotus tile when he mentioned
it. Which was in his sleeve the whole time. I just want to make it clear that Iroh had it the whole time. Yes, he needs to have it, but he already had it.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, though, did he stop there knowing he had it in his sleeve because he had business in the Order of the White Lotus to take care of that he could not disclose? I thought about that when watching this. I was like, what was he doing there that he had to get off and do that? I don't know. Maybe we'll see. I just really, when I was watching this episode, it made me think, man, Iroh's moving covertly. Even his nephew doesn't even know what's going on. So It's really wild. So at that point, Zuko follows him in. But you know what? He's not a member of the White Lotus. So he has to stay outside. Unfortunately, this is members only. When Iroh emerges, he says that they are going to Ba Sing Se, that there are many refugees there, and that they'll be able to stay there without being noticed. That moment, one of the other members of the White Lotus comes in with passports for them. And he says, I got the passports, but there's two men out there looking for them who happen to be Jingfu and Master Yu. So, you know what they do? They throw Zuko and Iroh inside of flower pots and they sneak them out. They've outsmarted both Jingfu and Master Yu, and now they're on their way to Ba Sing Se. Back in the desert, though, Aang has completely lost it. He's entered the Avatar state. He's yelling at the sandbenders to get him Appa, which they do not have. It's so scary that even Sokka and Toph take off with Momo.
Sokka's like, we got to move.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was great. Yeah. Sokka was like, I'm not even going to try. Bye. Yeah.
You guys got to go. And the Hami tell him that they sold Appa to a merchant and that the merchant was heading to Ba Sing Se. Aang creates such a sandstorm like we just talked about. And he's really looking like that he's going to kill them all. Everyone flees but Katara, who takes him by his hand. He then comes out of the Avatar state, and she holds him. And that ends the episode. Katara really shows up big in this episode with her leadership and with her ability to guide the whole team into a place that is, like, you know, better than where they were, even though they easily, without her in this episode, I really think that Team Avatar would have splintered and just been lost and maybe even dead. So shout out to Katara.
Yeah, and she also never really loses her patience with them, even though they're all kind of losing it.
Yep.
Yeah, this was a good episode for Katara. She really shows her value in more than just her waterbending abilities.
And it's really, I mean, just not to belabor it, but I just find it really fascinating, this connection that her and Aang both have with each other. I think, like, that her bending opened up him being freed from the iceberg, as we all know. And then in this moment where it's, you know, a really tough moment, like, I mean, any pet owner would relate to where Aang is right now. Where the hell is my bison? Like, I'm finna lose it. And she's able to see through his pain, and then, as we'll continue to explore, and still be able to, like, calm him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so.
Yeah, she understands Aang in a way that I don't think anyone else really does, which is she understands that when he enters the Avatar state, it's not just rage, it's loss and pain. And so I found it really beautiful that she's able to bring him back to who he is, because she does it through connection.
Yep.
You know, she does it just by connecting to who he is as a person and letting him know that he's not alone. The next episode is episode 12. This episode is called The Serpent's Pass in the original episode, run of the episodes, but Netflix has this episode combined with episode 13. So now they're out of the desert. Sokka, being the planner that he is looking for the best route to Ba Sing Se. Aang is still struggling about losing Appa, obviously. I would be struggling forever. That's just me. But he wants to put his focus on getting to the city and telling the Earth King about what they learned in the library.
They're surprised. They're like, oh, okay. Glad you're okay. After almost murking everyone in the desert, recovered nicely.
5 minutes ago, you were about to kill all of us, but okay, great. All right. Let's focus.
Yeah.
So they decide to go through this narrow path of land called the Serpent's Pass. They meet with a family of refugees. The name of the couple is Ying and Fen, and they're also heading to Ba Sing Se. And Sokka, who is harboring some trauma from the folks that he met at the Cave of Two Lovers, is not happy to see them.
No, he looks a little shocked. He's like, they're like, hey, refugees. He's like, fuck.
Sokka's like, no.
Not these not nomads again. Exactly.
I also want to note, this is the same couple that Zuko considered stealing food from in Zuko Alone and decided not to.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I thought was, like, a really nice thing that they're showing that line. This couple is representative of something.
Yep.
Instead, they decide to head to Full Moon Bay, where there are ferries that take refugees to Ba Sing Se. A ferry has just departed, and it's carrying Zuko and Iroh.
I'm sick of eating all this rotten food, sleeping in the dirt. I'm sick of living like this.
Oh, you can't see me playing the world's smallest violin right now. I was just like, come on, Zuko. You were, like, legit on your own with not even enough money to buy yourself food at all. All you could buy was feed for your horse, and now you're upset that you are on your way to a big city? Come on.
With gruel. He's sick of living like this. He's like, it's not, you know what? And the thing about it is, different sides of the spectrum, but I think it's pretty funny that in each crew, there's, like, one complainy guy. In Team Avatar, it's Sokka.
Yeah, it's 100% Sokka.
Right? It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Some other characters that we haven't seen in a while are also aboard the ferry.
Really?
Jet is there with Smellerby.
We love Smellerby.
My fave.
Yeah, we love her.
And Longshot, who never speaks, so I don't have any strong feelings about Longshot.
The rest of the crew just is out. There's only two. Jet and his freedom fighters. There's only two fighters. That's it.
Yeah, well, you know, they're on the street now, so, you know, maybe not everyone wanted to go that way. So Jet takes advantage of Zuko's dismay over the food and convinces him to join them to liberate some food from the captain.
Nice use of words.
Back at Full Moon Bay, there is a massive bureaucratic process for getting tickets. And the very first casualty of this process is also another character we have missed and have not seen in a while, the cabbage guy.
Oh, my cabbages!
Can we just talk about how his cabbages were not just, like, thrown out or given to the hungry refugees? They destroyed them?
By a bear. There was, like, a bear. Like this guy is definitely not down with our character, Yurik Bjornason from HDM. He's not down. This is the least cool thing to do, right? This is wild. Anyway.
Yeah, basically the woman is like, there's no food allowed on the ferry. I mean, wait a second. What? This doesn't even...
I told you already. One cabbage slug could destroy the whole ecosystem of Ba Sing Se.
Yeah, it's she's tough. She's
one
tough.
Cabbage slug, though? One? God.
So Team Avatar is also refused by this customs agent because they don't have passports. And then Sokka tries to pull the... He's the Avatar.
And there's, like, mad people dressed up like Aang.
There's a whole motley crew of Avatar cosplay happening behind them. She's like, your costume is not even impressive. I see Avatars all the time. Get out of here.
You know, Comic-Con New York was canceled, but we had it. Like, right there. There it is.
So Tav steps up and uses her privilege for good, and she presents the golden seal of the flying boar to get them
tickets. Yeah, the Beifongs are a big deal.
Listen, this customs agent is like, well, usually only one passport gets one ticket. But, you know, this is official. This is official. So I'm going to give you all tickets. So just after they get their tickets, they are reunited with Suki, who is not wearing her usual, you know, Kaioshi warrior setup. She's not wearing any makeup, and she's wearing an Earth Kingdom uniform after having joined the war cause.
Runs up on Sokka. See, she's got game. Suki's got game. She's all like, I know your kind. You know, sarcastic, eats a lot, hanging out with the Avatar. And she's all like, do I know you? Those are all pretty accurate attributes.
Yeah, yeah, she's...
Smooth.
I did not recognize her the first time I saw this episode either, so I understand why they don't recognize her right away. But this is like a whole... This episode has like all of these old characters in it. It's great. I loved it. So the refugee family returns to say all of their belongings have been stolen. Aang tries to get them new tickets. He tries to give them their tickets, but they refused, and he agrees to lead them through the Serpent's Pass. Suki agrees to go with them. And the sign at the pass says, abandon hope. Aang, who is hardened by the loss of Appa, agrees that they need to focus on what they're trying to do rather than holding on to hope, which surprises everyone, especially Katara.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, about where he was coming from later in the episode. But yeah, it was super surprising when you hear the symbol of hope in this world saying, hey, maybe we should abandon hope. It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. As they start to walk, they see a Fire Nation ship, and Suki tells them that there's a rumor that the Fire Nation is working on something big, and they don't want anyone to know what it is. And just then, they are attacked by the Fire Nation ship, and Toph and Aang are able to divert the fireballs.
And Sokka almost catches a bad one, okay? But Toph saves him.
Yeah.
And all he can do is worry about Suki. Like, Suki, you gotta be more careful, Toph, for the win. Gee, thanks, Toph, for saving my life. No problem, Sokka.
Sokka is very protective of Suki during this whole thing. He's worried about where she walks, where she sleeps. He tells Suki that he's being overprotected because, you know, he's still upset that he couldn't protect Yue. And Suki tells him that she still has feelings. And just as they're about to kiss, Sokka pulls away.
But why does he pull away is the question. I found it remarkable that while he's there staring out at Yue as the moon, he's staring at the moon, who we know now partially is Yue, And then he has this intimate moment with another person who he's interested in, or who's interested in him as well. And that it's like in the backdrop, you see the moon. So was he pulling away because he really just didn't want to kiss? Or did he feel like Yue was there also? And it was like kind of like a moment where he was awkward. It was an awkward moment.
Well, I feel like this would be like a moment where he's like posting a picture of the trip on Instagram and it's like Yue just liked the picture.
Yeah.
it's a little too much. A little too much.
Yeah, you gotta do it too much. All right, I get it. I feel it.
So Katara and Aang also have a little conversation and she confronts him about pretending not to care about Appa.
Yeah.
Aang says that he lost control in the desert. And so, you know, he's trying to keep it together. And Katara reminds him that it's okay to hope and care. Which, you know, I don't think he hears right in that moment. But
no, he hits her with a bow and a curtsy. Like, yeah. He's basically like, oh, okay. Thank you, Katara, for your care and your concern. Hits her with a bow. Like, after the secret tunnel fiasco, you know, I'd rather kiss you than die. This is a not looking good for Aang and his, you know, his feelings for Katara. It's not looking good.
Well, you know, he's going through a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I could barely focus with Appa missing. I can't imagine how
rough. It's rough. I mean, Appa being gone is super rough. Like, it feels like, and it feels like a member of the family's gone, right? Like all these episodes with no Appa, it's only been like, you know, one so far, and it's still, it's weird. It's super weird.
So back on the ferry, Zuko and Jet, you know, liberate the food from the captain's pantry. While enjoying their provisions.
Well, I do want to say, let's just say when they liberate the food, that the blue spirit, you know, if he ever wanted to give up this whole, like, restoring his honor and capturing the Avatar thing, he would do a bang-up job and make a lot of money opening up his own chain of hibachi restaurants. This motherfucker with the two broadswords was, like, stacking up the bowls, like, without ever touching them. I was like, yo, and go with me here for a second. Breeds fire, nice with the blades. I would go to that restaurant. He loves fine cuisine. Yeah, I'm there.
Yep. Totally. I would definitely go. 100%. So while they're enjoying their new provisions, we learned that Smellerbee is a girl, which surprised me. I didn't know Smellerbee was a girl either.
Me neither.
Which is kind of cool. I like that Smellerbee, you know, there's this whole moment where Smellerbee gets mad because she's like, I'm a girl, and storms off, and then Longshot and her have a one-sided conversation about accepting herself. I love this part of the episode. Yeah. I thought it was so good.
So good. It's so good. It was great.
It was so good. So Iroh and Jet talk about Ba Sing Se, and he tells Jet that he believes in, you know, second chances.
Eyeball emojis at Zuko. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Team Avatar and the other refugees enter the ocean between the cliffs, with Katara and Aang waterbending like a bubble around them so that they can walk through. And there's an enormous sea serpent that attacks them.
And Sokka offers up Momo as a sacrifice. What the fuck?
Like, I know. It's such a bad moment for Sokka because it reminds us that the first time Sokka met Momo, he wanted to eat him.
Oh, God.
So Aang distracts the monster while Katara creates a bridge of ice. Toph struggles to get across, and Suki immediately goes out to get her, like, swims immediately.
Yeah, and Toph is all, oh, Sokka, you saved me, and gives a big kiss to Suki.
Yeah, I was like, oh, does Toph have a little crush on Sokka?
Oh, looks like it.
What's going on?
Oh, man.
So, using a combo of waterbending and airbending, Katara and Aang defeat the serpent. Back on the ship, Jet and tells Zuko that he knows who he is. And that, you know, as outcasts, they should stick together. And I'm like, the whole time I was like, Zuko, no. Zuko, no. You've come too far. Do not let this fuckboy manipulate you into joining
true
his
true fuckboy. Like, real fuckboy.
Yeah.
And you know what? Don't ever, ever utter the name of my favorite rap group ever, Outkast. You are not Big Boy or Andre 3000. You are not them. Okay?
So now that they are safely back on land, Suki and Sokka say goodbye. They share a little kiss.
I love it.
Now that you know Yue is not watching anymore. Before she says she has to return back to the other Kyoshi warriors. Ying goes into labor, and Katara, being the champ that she is, immediately takes charge and delivers a baby girl. I just also want to note that Sokka has a full-on meltdown. Like, a full-on meltdown.
Can you hold it in? Like, can you do something? He's like, yo, I've delivered babies. Baby seals don't count. No, I've delivered human babies. Okay? Like, with Grand. What's happening?
So, after the baby's born, Aang goes into the tent that Toph created to give them some privacy, and says that seeing the baby brings back hope. He'd really been struggling, and seeing the baby reminds him of, you know, what it means to connect and love. And the family decides to name the baby Hope, which I have to admit to getting a little misty-eyed at this point.
For sure.
Aang's also, you know, talks about his connection to Katara and all of the people he loves as well. And he, you know, heads off to go find Appa over the walls of Ba Sing Se. And once he gets up there, he sees a giant drill heading for the wall and tells Momo that, unfortunately, Appa's going to have to wait because clearly there's a crisis looming.
And that crisis leads us to episode 13, which is really what they have as one episode on Netflix. But it's the drill. Episode 13, the drill. The drill that that Aang sees is heading straight towards Ba Sing Se and being commanded by who else? Azula. All right?
Yep. And she's like not even being helpful. She's just kind of sitting on like a throne.
Yeah. While the general is talking about how it's going to, what they're going to be able to do with it and giving a distinction, the description of the drill itself. Oh, God. Azula. So there's a group of Earth Kingdom soldiers in the trenches waiting to attack when the drill arrives. But Azula says, you know what? Cool, I'm glad that you think that the drill's going to be able to get right through those dudes. But Mei, Ty Lee, why don't you go out there and fight them? And of course, they do. They go out and do what Azula wants. And Mei is kind of happy because, God, it's been so boring.
So boring. Mei is basically the female equivalent to Zuko. Like, she is never happy. It's really funny.
They're perfect. They're perfect. Exactly. It's great. Up on the wall, an Earth Kingdom general tells Team Avatar that the Fire Nation cannot penetrate the walls of Ba Sing Se, to which Toph is like,
He's
the dragon.
Hella confident.
She's like, you know, I tempered down a little bit, guy. The Dragon of the West did actually penetrate the wall, a.k.a. the Spin Master, Master Iroh, a.k.a., you know, that guy with the good tea. He made it to the outer wall and made it through. Toph is taking no shorts on this exchange and does not find the general's banter funny in the least bit, to which he says, well, they don't call it Na Sing Se. Bossing say.
This whole lie was ridiculous. I was like, this guy is hella confident. Like, the Avatar is telling you need to be concerned.
Yeah. And so Toph was like, yeah, thanks for the tour. All right, tough guy. Hey, let's see what happens. So the Earthbending soldiers, known as the Terra Team. No, folks, that's not Fat Joe and Big Pun. That would be the Terra Squad, okay? But these guys are not players. They get crushed a lot, okay? That's what happens to them. They are quickly taken out by Mei and Ty Lee. Quickly.
Very quickly. It's not even, like, a real fight. Like, Mei and Ty Lee maybe, like, broke a little bit of a sweat, but it was quick.
Yo, she's flipping and hitting and chi blocking like it is nothing. Like, she's not even worried about it. And the Earth Kingdom Commander sees this through his, you know, binoculars, and he changes his course sheepishly, and ask for Aang's help. To which Toph is like, yeah, you know, maybe you need to ask the Avatar for help now. And he's like, yeah, I do. Please help. Please. So they look to Sokka for a plan. To which Sokka is feeling the pressure. And, you know, he's like, man, why am I the one that always has to come up with the plans? Well, you're the idea man, right? So he also happens to be the complaining man.
I kind of wish somebody had said something mean to him, like, well, you can't bend, so, like. That was a petty in me, but, I love my guy, Sokka.
Yeah, we love him. We love him. But, that was the perfect opening. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to do something, bro. Like.
So good. So true. Oh, man. So Iroh is charming his way into the city of Ba Sing Se that he sang with. He talked about the girls of Ba Sing Se, but
now he's met one.
Yeah, exactly. So, meanwhile, Jet tells Smellerby and Longshot that he thinks Zuko, who is using the alias Lee, would make a good freedom fighter. Smellerby seems to think their days as outlaws are over, and she's like, well, why are we even thinking about this? We're changing our ways, right? While tending to one of the soldiers that was paralyzed by Ty Lee, Katara mentions that Ty Lee's ability to paralyze and compares it to being taken down from the inside, and at that moment, Sokka has an aha moment. A plan is formed. He then realizes they will have to disable the drill from inside of the drill. So Toph creates a dust cloud so the entire gang can sneak by into a tunnel near an entrance. But they go underground, to which Sokka complains about not being able to see a thing.
Oh, what a nightmare. Toph is so good. He's like, oh, sorry.
Sorry, exactly. I mean, again, totally oblivious. Totally oblivious to what Toph works through. It's crazy. So Toph does not go into the drill. She says very clearly she's not going inside that metal monster because she will not be able to bend inside of there.
Mm-hmm. She also can't see inside of there, right? Because if she can't bend, she can't feel the earth. So I think this was a good move on Toph.
Totally good move. She's way more valuable outside there, right? So Sokka breaks a pipe, and he said, and everyone's like, what are you doing? Like, Katara and Aang are like, what are you doing? He says, yeah, there's engineers that have to come and fix something that's broken. So if I break something, the engineer's going to come. And this engineer particularly has the plans with him. All right. Pretty convenient plot point, but we'll move on. All right. That's it. He does have the plans for the drill, and the drill is made of two main structures, the inner drill and the outer layer. Back with Iroh as they're waiting to get into the city, Iroh and Zuko are sitting, and Iroh orders some jasmine tea, which turns out to be cold. He spits it out.
Also, I think it's bad. Like, I think it's both tastes gross and it's also cold, which coffee drinkers will know. You can have cold coffee if it's good.
Exactly.
If it's bad, no.
It's terrible.
You can't do it.
Yeah, it's bad. Cold brew has to be good. Has to be well-brewed coffee, 100%. In the meantime, Jet takes his opportunity to pull Zuko aside and tries to convince him to join the Freedom Fighters. But Zuko's like, nah, I'm not going to do that. To which, while they're talking, Iroh decides, you know what? I want some tea. And he uses his firebending to warm up the tea. Jet takes note as Zuko's walking away that now the tea that was cold is now hot. And, Zuko's upset and he smashes the tea out of, Iroh's hand. And he's like, for such a wise old man, that was a stupid move. To which Iroh's like, I know you're not supposed to cry over spilled tea, but it's just so sad. Iroh, give that little bit of wisdom to our guy, August Alsina. Stop crying over fucking spilled tea, bro. It's over, okay? Let's move on. This fucking guy spilling all the tea crying over it.
I knew Will and Jada would make it in this podcast somehow. Oh my gosh.
This is not a red table talk, but I needed to say what I needed to say, okay? Real weak sauce, crying over all that spilled tea. Anyway. Team Avatar isn't having much luck in the drill, all right? They're struggling. They're trying to separate the braces holding the outer layer of the drill from the inner layer. And after a long time of waterbending, I mean, literally a drop at a time.
Like, it's really hard.
They're exhausted. It's not really going well. So they slice through one brace and they're finally like, okay. And by then Aang and Katara are just wiped out. Aang remembers something that Toph told him, that they have to be precise with their movements, and decides just to damage all of the braces rather than cutting through all of them straight through. He realizes that if they just weaken them, that they can go ahead and use that as a way for it to collapse on itself, use its own weight to collapse upon itself by weakening everything. Just as they're making those moves, a report comes through and Azula hears it. And now Azula and squad are coming up to show up to fight them, and they have to duck, right? To get out of the way of her firebending. Mei and Ty Lee go after Sokka and Katara, and Azula chases Aang. The Avatar is mine.
She's not that different from her brother. Let's be honest.
No.
They're both like very in one note.
Don't you see the resemblance? The Avatar and my honor. She does such a good Zuko too. It's really funny. She's great. Anyway, Sokka and Katara jump into a waste system. But only Ty Lee's going in there. Mei's like, she can shoot all the lightning at me she wants. I'm not digging in there. Fuck that. I'm an aristocrat, baby.
Yeah, I totally sided with Mei here. I was like, why are you going so hard to impress Azula, Ty Lee? Like, no. You're going to get in, like, the sewage system? Come on. No.
Yeah, it's wild. So they get on the other side, and here comes Ty Lee. Full force with a big old smile, thinking she's going to chi block again. But Katara's like, yo, I'm not even going to let her get close to me, and suspends the waist into the drill so that she's in, you know, using water bending so that Ty Lee's hanging from outside of the drill. Sokka uses this opportunity to be a cheerleader, to which Katara smacks him with some water and be like, bruh, stop telling me what to do. I got this. Pretty funny. Meanwhile, General Sung. That's the guy that was refusing the Avatar's help.
Yeah, 5 minutes ago.
Earlier? Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, five minutes ago. He's tossing rocks like that's helpful. Like he's just dropping rocks on top of the drill. To which Aang is like, stop throwing rocks, bro. He's all like, whatever you do, don't stop throwing rocks. What an idiot this guy is. Oh, man. It's like pretty crazy. So at this point, Toph joins Katara to help clog the drain with rocks and water. So she earthbends, Katara waterbends. And Aang is now winded, trying to go ahead and cut through the top of this thing and help this plan of collapsing it from with its own weight start to take shape. And he, you know, he's sitting there and he's thinking to himself, man, I really wish that I could metal bend. Azula shows up. Right at that moment, they begin to fight. And Aang is using earthbending for the first time in a battle. But Azula is able to, like, you know, knock away the rock and knock him out. The drill then makes it through the wall just as Azula has knocked him out. And Azula is about to kill Aang. She's like, you know, going back. The lightning's coming. And Aang turns his fist into a rock and knocks her out, stopping the lightning bending that she was about to do. And then the sludge stops them both by making them slide off of the drill. As Aang is about to fall off, Momo saves him and allows him to airbend, you know, by picking him up from sliding off of his back to airbend up to the top. Aang turns a rock into a wedge, and he does one of the most amazing moves I've seen. He goes up the wall airbending, turns, the way you see it is then he runs full speed airbending down the wall and jumps onto the wedge right as Azula is trying to hit him with the rock. That then sends, you know, a shock through the drill, which allows for the thing he was trying to do, for the drill's weight to collapse upon itself. And, you know, at that point, Ty Lee and Azula are covered in a lot of rock and sludge, to which Mei comes out and announces the obvious. We lost.
Totally dry. She's like,
Totally dry. Good move by Mei. As they board the train to take them into the city, Jet tells Smellerbee and Longshot that Zuko and Iroh are firebenders. Iroh sits on the train, and who is he sitting next to? Baby Hope and her family.
Hmm.
Yeah, they've made it into the city. Really cool. The episode ends with Sokka brainstorming new names for Team Avatar. Katara with the fail, though. She says, Team Avatar will never stick, no matter how many times you say it. It stuck. It did.
Yeah, it's a thing. I thought the Boomerang Squad was a good name.
I did, too. I liked it. Boomerang, how he explained it? The Boomerang Squad, since his name is Aang. Oh, gosh. Good. Sokka.
Episode 14 is called The City of Walls and Secrets.
And boy, is it.
Oof. What a descriptor. Right to the point. Yeah. So on the train to the inner city, inner wall of the city, Katara happily notes that she, you know, can't believe they finally made it into Ba Sing Se.
Not so close. We've had some pretty bad luck, Sokka says. Something could still happen, right?
I know. I was kind of on Team Sokka here. As they make it past the city wall, they see the splendor and the size of the city. It's huge. Sokka is really excited. I mean, coming from the Water Tribe, I'm sure this was like, he's probably never seen anything like this.
I mean, this does Ba Sing Se, like, here's the thing. It's a wall. It's like a, it's a huge city with a big, beautiful wall. Is this Trump City? Like, what the fuck? Okay. Should we have already thought something weird is happening?
Something
weird.
I did not know we were going to take it there. Toph describes the city as just a bunch of walls and rules. She is unimpressed.
Yeah.
Aang can feel Appa's presence, but he's overwhelmed at the prospect of finding him in such a large city. And it is pretty terrifying how big it is. It would take probably years to go down every single street and look for Appa. A woman approaches them, and she introduces herself.
I'm Judy. Welcome to the city of Ba Sing Se. I'll be your tour guide.
She will be their tour guide, as she says, during their stay. Sokka wants to get straight to business. He wants to see the Earth King immediately. But Judy doesn't seem to understand the urgency and tells them that everything is safe, which is also a little bit off topic.
Everything is safe here in Ba Sing Se. There's nothing to worry about. I'm Judy.
Wow.
On the tour, she tells them that there are many walls in Ba Sing Se. The ones on the outside to protect them, and the ones on the inside to maintain order. As she takes them through the part of the city, which is basically where the city keeps all the poor refugees. Iroh, who is also just arriving in the city, isn't going to let being poor or being in the poor part of town bring him down.
Not at all.
He's out here shopping for decorations for their new space.
In case Zuko brings home a lady friend.
Yeah. Zuko, though, can feel the weight of being in a city with all these walls. He calls the city a prison, and he doesn't want to make a life there. Iroh tells him, listen, life isn't about where you are. Life just happens, whether you make it or not. Mm-hmm. And he also tells Zuko that he found them some new jobs, and they start right away.
I like this about Iroh. He got there in 2 seconds. He was like, we got to get some work. We got to, like, make a life. Let's make this happen. I like it. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, he makes a really good point. Like, they can sit there and kind of, like, ruminate about their situation, or they can try to make the best of it. Yep. They can try to have some control over the circumstances. I like his attitude, as always. Iroh's the best. The Freedom Fighters are on their tail. Jet wants to report them to the police, and Smellerbee and Longshot are kind of still skeptical.
They're not really trying to just be behind the walls and live life. Like, you're still on this Freedom Fighter shit, man. Calm down.
Yeah, I'm sure both Smellerbee and Longshot are like, why did we come with him? Can we dodge him? Like, how can we get rid of this dude?
Yeah.
So Judy then takes Team Avatar through the middle ring, aka the middle class part of town. Mm-hmm. And Sokka is kind of losing his patience at this point. He's really like, we need to see the Earth King. And she just keeps avoiding the subject.
Isn't history fascinating? This is her line to, like, we found some scrolls, and, like, there's an eclipse coming, and we need to tell the Earth King all about it. Oh, isn't history fascinating? He's like, we met a university scholar from the University of Ba Sing Se. And he's like frustrated, and Toph is like, yeah, it's called being handled, dude. Like,
yeah. And Toph is obviously used to it because she's been handled her whole life.
Yep.
So Iroh and Zuko start their new jobs at a tea shop. Iroh is literally disgusted by the quality of the tea being served. He calls it hot tea juice.
He said, is it all tea just hot leaf juice? How could someone in my family say something so horrible? I love him.
Oh, man. It's so good. And Jet is still lurking like the stalker creeper that he is.
Such a creeper. He's a trash bag. Real. I mean, yes. Let's just move on. We know he's a fuckboy. Like, it is what it is.
So... Team Avatar arrives at the Upper Ring, which is the upscale part of town where the Royal Palace lives. So this is where the 1% is located.
Yeah.
And they see some creepy-looking police who are the Dali, the cultural authority of Ba Sing Se, and the guardian of our traditions. Sounds sketchy as hell.
All of this sounds sketchy. The walls for order... this, like, you know, secret police. Man, this is Trump City, man. I don't care what nobody says. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
So they're escorted to their new home, and Judy tells them that their request to see the Earth King has been processed. Yay! And it will take about a month. What? By her standards, that's quick. Aang basically says, okay, fine, if it's going to take, they're going to be there for a month, that they need to start looking for Appa. And Judy invites herself along. Nobody asked her, though.
No.
Yeah, like, nobody asked you to come. So no one will tell them anything because Judy is there.
With her creepy-ass smile. Like, it's so creepy. I like Judy, but it's creepy.
When she escorts them home... they see a neighbor kind of looking outside. They go over to see him. His name is Pong. And he tells them he's a minor governor official. And he can't tell them anything because no one even talks about the war. And he tells them, you know, they should stay away from the Dai Li. Jet is still, this far into the episode, being creepy. And watching, waiting for Iroh and Zuko to make a mistake and firebend.
This guy is trash, and him being trash is definitely on brand.
Yeah,
this
is on brand for him. He's like totally obsessed with this now, and it's kind of disturbing. The next morning, Katara brings news that the king is having a party for his pet bear. There's a whole discussion about what kind of bear it is. Whatever. I'm not going to get into all that. Toph tells them in the most savage way possible that it won't work. They can't sneak into the party because they're low class, have no manners.
No manners.
She says Katara may be able to pull it off, but Aang and Sokka would barely be able to pass as busboys. Wow.
Oh, savage.
This was tough. I was like, whoa.
Savage.
So Katara and Toph get dressed up and they go to the party. Aang and Sokka... are also going, but they're going to, like, sneak in through a side gate. Aang notes that Katara looks very pretty.
Wow, you look beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm sprung. Got me.
Anyway, this guy is hilarious.
During the same night, Smellerby and Longshot decide it's time to have a little chat with Jet. Telling him that he's obsessed, and there's no evidence that Iroh and Zuko are firebenders. Jet loses it, bursts into the tea shop, accuses Iroh and Zuko of being firebenders, to which no one believes, and then he threatens Iroh with his sword, and Zuko is like, okay, now you gotta catch these hands.
And Zuko is nice with these broadswords, man. Like, nice with them, and he's not trying to... listen... he don't need no fire bending to whip Jet's ass. Jet is
no,
soft.
No, he really doesn't. Like, I don't know what Jet was thinking. Like, yeah. Zuko is a masterful fighter without using any bending whatsoever.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's crazy. He's going to catch one right now.
Yeah. So, back at the party, Toph tries to charm her way in, but it doesn't work. And Katara walks up to a newly arrived noble and, you know, uses a little manipulation as she uses from time to time and helps them get into the party. The king's bear is having a really good time eating.
This is more Yurik style. To me, this is the little Yurik Bjornason style. I like it.
It's a lot. He's like sitting at a table eating. It's like the nobles are kind of like, what's happening here?
But he's dressed as a noble, and people are paying top dollar just to sit next to him. It's pretty impressive.
True. Yeah, it's like the VIP section. The king is not there, though. So, you know, interesting that his bear is there, but he is not. The guy who helped them get into the party, you know, they try to ditch him. His name is Long Feng, and he's a cultural minister to the king. They cannot ditch him. He is basically like, I will help you find your family. Aang and Sokka try to figure out another way into the party, and Toph and Katara find them. But then Judy interrupts them and tells them everyone has to go. Like, she's freaking out.
Yeah.
Judy is like, you cannot be here. Like, my whole job was to keep you from being here. Aang does a thing that he is, like, constantly doing at this point, which is spills a drink on this woman and then dries her through airbending, to which reveals that he is the Avatar. Which, yeah. I'm just like, what? Aang, why does this keep happening?
It's his calling card. It's like what he does, you know? It's like some guys tell bad jokes, some people spill tea on people in the airbend. It is what it is.
So he distracts the party with his airbending tricks while Sokka tries to find the king. Judy is still freaking out. So back in the streets of Ba Sing Se, though, Jet and Zuko are at it. They're fighting. Yeah. It spills into the street. Eventually, the Dai Li show up and arrest Jet. Aang and Sokka try to approach the Earth King, but the Dai Li prevent him, capture Sokka, Toph, and Katara. And then Long Feng takes them aside and tells them that the king does not have time to deal with war planning, and he manages all of the resources.
So he's a puppet. He's a figurehead. Is yeah. what they basically come to.
Yeah, they're basically keeping the king in the dark. He tells them that it's a strict policy that the war is never mentioned inside the city to maintain peace and order. Long Feng also threatens them and says that if they mention the conflict, they will be expelled from the city. And he calls for Judy to come in, and another woman appears and introduces herself as Judy, their host. This part was terrifying.
Very terrifying, because in the midst of that, Jet is being brainwashed and
yep.
to forget everything that just happened and that there is even a war. It's super scary.
Yeah, this whole episode was really scary. For a lot of reasons, I like it because it's very easy in these types of stories to make, it would have been very easy to make everybody good and the Fire Nation evil. That is not what this story is doing, right? The Earth Kingdom has multiple times shown us that they are also kind of a mess and can be just as oppressive. So I liked it, but it was really, it was terrifying. Like all, and it was very like triggering all of the stuff, like the propaganda, the denial. I was feeling it. I was really feeling it. Like,
I don't know
wow.
what you're talking about. There's no such thing as a war. There's no coronavirus. There's none of these things. Just ask Judy. I talked to her.
That's it.
Oh, man.
That's it. Anyway, the point is, this is a city that 45 could get behind. That's all I know. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about themes. The cost of war. What is one of the themes? Atla has always had a supportive view of refugees. Despite being a show for children, the show has never shied away from the human cost of the Fire Nation's war. We meet more refugees in these episodes and also see the plight of refugees through the eyes of two of our main characters, Zuko and Iroh. This is a particularly powerful choice because when we first meet Zuko, he had wealth and power and he had his own ship. Now he's stripped of everything. Including his identity. He and Iroh are moving through the world as refugees and with limited resources and options and choices. They're also learning what it's like to have little control over one's life and your circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Iroh tries to make the best of it, but Zuko is really struggling, which is understandable. Another thing that we sort of just mentioned was, you know, how this Ba Sing Se is set up. One of the themes here is questioning authority, which we see Toph do right away. Mm-hmm. As soon as they get there, she's very skeptical of the city. In Ba Sing Se, the government is more concerned with keeping peace and order than freedom of movements, thoughts, and speech. Talk of the war is forbidden, even though the city is literally full of refugees who fled that very war.
Yeah.
The government explains this by saying it is seeking to keep the walled city safe from the threat of the Fire Nation, but it's really also concerned about maintaining order and control over the citizens of the city. Part of this control is also in creating a massive bureaucracy and maintaining secrecy. Mm-hmm. Your bureaucracy's first function is to maintain the semblance of order and to promote propaganda. So the official story is that everything's okay. But we know that it isn't. There was just a drill outside of the city walls.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to belabor the point. But how is this different than what we're experiencing right now? All right? There's so many people who are losing their life, sadly. And we have leadership that denies the very existence of the thing. This is why stories are so powerful, because they can really reflect back to us things we're experiencing in real time in a way that like brings it home almost in an allegorical kind of format. And it's so on point. This episode is so on point to what we're experiencing.
So the threat of the unquestioned authority is just as dangerous as the threat of the Fire Nation's control and that violence that the Fire Nation creates. The citizens of Ba Sing Se are not free from tyranny just because it appears so. Mm-hmm. They too are prisoners, as Zuko noted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, really profound thing that he says in that moment. He says, this place is a prison. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, I'm not planning on getting comfortable.
I find it interesting that Zuko and Toph, who have both come from privileged positions, kind of see through it first.
Mm-hmm.
And the others do kind of get carried away with the magnificence of the city. They don't see all of these walls as a threat immediately. So that, you know, definitely their past experience in living under a tyrannical regime. In Toph, mm-hmm. it's her own family. Actually, for Zuko, it's his family too. It just so happens that his family is in power. They see it immediately that this is not freedom, even yeah. though it's supposed to be.
And Toph, you know, like the Beifongs are a huge deal in the Earth Kingdom. As we know, that's how they almost got across on a ferry, right? Like she comes from a place, I would say, if I was drawing a comparison, it's like the times where there were the nobles in like, you know, the kingdom in England, where there was like, there were people who had very high standing, even if they weren't in the royal family.
Are you comparing Toph to the Grantham family of Downton Abbey?
Yeah, I would say so. Yes, that the Beifongs are like the Granthams. Yes, I like it. Yes, I love it. That's a great tie-in. Oh, we love Downton.
Yeah,
oh my
we
gosh.
Really love Downton.
We really do. Oh, love that show. So let's talk about the present moment. And that's another theme. You know, at the Serpent's Pass, Team Avatar comes to a sign. And the sign says, abandon hope. And, you know, the family there is saying, how can we, you know, abandon hope? That's all that we have. But Aang says the monks used to say that hope is a distraction and that maybe we do need to abandon it. And as the symbol of hope, this may have been shocking for many people to hear. And it definitely shocked Katara, right? But there's wisdom in this and what he's saying, because what he says next is that they need to focus on what they're doing right now. If they want to be successful on the mission that they're on, then the present moment is what's going to be important. Hope is a focus on the future, and regret, it can be a focus on the past. And while it isn't an inspiring message that's coming from the Avatar, who people look to for inspiration and hope, it's something that he's trying to communicate in that only the present moment can create the moments of the past or the future. So the present moment is inevitable. And while coming from Aang, who's not in the best headspace at the moment, that focus on the present moment can create the life that we want when we look for freedom or any of the things that we're trying to get to, or, you know, defeating the Fire Nation, but it's truly something that they must have right now is the present moment awareness about what they're doing as they cross into the world of Ba Sing Se, to pay attention to what's happening now so that they can move closer to their objective.
Mm-hmm. And part of, you know, coming to the present moment is also acknowledging how you're feeling, and acknowledging what's happening inside of you. And Aang's separation from Appa brings us to another theme, which is loss. So this theme of loss continues through the episodes because, spoiler, we're not going to see Appa right away, right? Appa is missing for several episodes. And so Aang is really struggling with this because he and Appa are more than just companions. Appa is not just Aang's pet. He is one of Aang's remaining connections to his childhood and his culture as an air nomad. In these episodes, we see Aang cycling through all of the natural stages of grief, and it scares him. Losing Appa caused him to lose control and move into the Avatar state. Only his connection to Katara can bring him back. And that was because Katara would not leave him alone in his worst moment. She wouldn't let him grieve by himself. She pulled him back from that destructive path. In Buddhism, loss is viewed as a form of suffering that we will all experience. And I think that's really true. But out of the experience of navigating through our suffering, we can be renewed and find new meaning. Once Aang is able to accept the situation and his feelings about it, he is able to see hope again.
Freaking beautiful. Goodness.
Yeah. It's really, really, I mean, the Serpent's Pass episode feels so tied to Buddhism in a way that, you know, all of these episodes are, but I really loved the abandoned hope sign and how they tied it off at the end with Baby Hope being born and Aang coming to the realization that he can't just press all his feelings away. He has to accept he's, you know, in this moment where he's separated from Appa, but he can get, you know, he can focus on getting Appa back. He can't just try to suppress everything. It's a really beautiful moment.
And this thing that you mentioned earlier about how this family is symbolic, right? How they, you know, Zuko sees them and he almost robs them, but he doesn't because his respect for life, like a new life, right? And then they travel through all of these really difficult circumstances. They get turned away, right? Like from their ability to go into the city. And then this baby is born. And it was something we talked about offline, but like, you know, with new life comes hope. And so this family being like a symbol of like this journey that you're talking about of loss and the things that we see with like the embracing of refugees and what has gone on. And then like to see a new life that has a clean slate and with it comes hope. And it's really cool.
Yeah. And it makes you also, if you think a little bit about Baby Hope, like, you also want to see change in Ba Sing Se because mm-hmm. now her family's starting over in the city and you want to make sure that she doesn't have a life of oppression and of lies and of propaganda. So I love how they used Baby Hope. I really like, she is a writing instrument. Like, this character who doesn't even have any lines because she's a baby becomes so important right away.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, it's interesting. We talk a lot about Buddhism on the show, and I think very rarely, and for rightfully so, and, you know, we've talked about Taoism, and very rarely do you see any of the Western tropes come into, in religious tropes or spiritual tropes come into this story. But what I would say it kind of reminded me of, honestly, as we're sitting here talking now, is, you know, the story of, like, Jesus's family being turned away, like, from mm-hmm. the city. And then, and where he was born and what, and, you know, in a manger, like, so it's very interesting to see like how they bring in a little bit of that when you talk about, you know, refugees and how people are treated and the cost of war. I just find like they touch on a lot of themes, even subtly, that are really interesting, you know? So that'll close out our episode for the week. Oh my goodness. It's been, you know, we had 4th of July. We had a little, you know, like little Hamilton love that we showed. And now, you know, if you're listening to this episode today, you are going to get, we're going to be doing our hate watch tomorrow night, 8 p.m., Friday, 8 p.m., we will be getting together. Click on the link that we're sharing to our Facebook page to join it. We will watch Avatar, what is it, The Last Airbender movie, directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Your favorite director.
God, that guy.
Yes, so we know this movie is not beloved by the fans. Neither of us have seen it yet, so it will be the first time we will have the ability to chat with you guys while we're watching it. It should be a lot of fun. So if you want to be part of that, you can check it out on our Facebook page. If you're not on Facebook, email us at kinfolklore@gmail.com and we will send you the link.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Have a good rest of your week, and we will see you tomorrow.
All right. Bye, everyone.